This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths, and thanks for joining Laura Condon, our New Hampshire voice for vaccine choice. Laura, what if I'm a mother out here? I've got a five-year-old. I'm getting ready to send them to kindergarten. I've already had some vaccines, but I'm hearing some things that really concern me. Where do I go for more information so I can find out what I can and cannot do as far as the schools are concerned?
I will recommend as your go-to resource is the National Vaccine Information Center. And again, that's www.nvic.org. And because that will provide you to links to everything you need to know. It gives links to the manufacturers, their prescribing information, gives links to the CDC. It gives links to research and studies that were done. And it also gives links to state law. So you will find the vaccine requirements there, and that'll additionally link you to the exemptions. Now, in New Hampshire, we are restricted to two exemptions here in the state. There's a medical exemption, but that we are finding is harder and harder to obtain for various reasons. It's, you know, the CDC has pulled back their recommendations. It's what's a contraindication, including egg allergies. They're no longer saying that that's a contraindication for the flu vaccine. Apparently, they, you know, want a child under medical supervision. I don't know if it's in the emergency room or whatever to be injected and see if they go into anaphylactic shock. But we're finding that those medical exemptions are harder and harder to get. Doctors are being required to inject 90% of their patients, so they're very resistant, or they're penalized, very resistant to giving those medical exemptions.
Wait a minute. The doctors are penalized if they don't give enough vaccinations?
It is part of both Obamacare and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services requirement based on Healthy Goals 2020 that 90% of the population will be injected with the flu vaccine, for example. And it's not just Medicare and Medicaid patients, but all people, all patients be injected. And if they don't meet those goals, they are penalized. Their reimbursement for Medicare and Medicaid services will be docked. And that, so we're talking significant dollars. So, and most doctors are not independent practitioners these days. They're employees of a medical facility. And so the medical facility we're finding is leaning very heavily on those doctors to make sure that 90% of their patients are being injected. So they're very resistant to those medical exemptions. So they're very hard to come by these days. The other exemption is a religious exemption in New Hampshire. It is a simple form to fill out. You can pull that form off the Department of Health and Human Services website, the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. You complete that form, you have it notarized, and you submit it to your child's school. It doesn't go to the doctor, it doesn't go to the state, it goes to your child's school, and they accept it. Currently, parents are not being interrogated about their religious beliefs in the state of New Hampshire. We are finding they're being interrogated in other states. But your question really was, is what if a parent decides they have concerns about these vaccines in consultation with their doctor? They look at their child's, you know, health history and their medical practices, and they decide it's not appropriate. You cannot make a vaccine decision, which is a medical decision, based on those sort of information and decisions like you would any other medical decision, but you're barred from doing that in the state of New Hampshire.
So is that a legislative thing where it's been mandated by some law that was made by the legislature?
Well, in fact, vaccines are mandated by the state legislature. They mandated 7 vaccines, and then back in 1995, they handed off authority to the Department of Health and Human Services to mandate it by rule, whatever additional vaccines they so desire.
So now any additional, it's just because the policy of HHS is that we're going to add X, Y, and Z to the formula.
By their rulemaking process, which is a much more closed process, than the legislative process. And if we object to that rulemaking process, these aren't people we can elect out of office as we can through our legislature. So that was a really bad move that New Hampshire made to pass off the authority to the Department of Health and Human Services to mandate vaccines. It really should be in the hands of the public whose this mandate is being imposed on. So really, the authority does belong in the legislature, and I would like to see that brought back to the legislature.
Right. Well, I make an argument all the time for personal responsibility. If we're supposed to, there are consequences when we make certain choices that we have to live with. That is a true liberty and freedom when you are the person in charge of making your choices. And yet it sounds to me like this has been totally taken out of my hands and I can't do anything about it. I can't just go to the school and say, I as a parent have decided that it's not in my child's best interest for them to get these additional vaccines. And under the current situation, the only way I can do that is with a religious exemption or to threaten my doctor with in an inch of his life to give me a medical. That's what it sounds like. I mean, I don't want to encourage people to use any violence, but that is truly what it sounds like. It's very, very difficult to get the medical exemption.
And we're finding that doctors are dismissing patients from their practices. I mean, I would fire a doctor who wouldn't let me have the choice.
Yeah.
But we are finding that doctors are dismissing patients who won't inject themselves or their children. But in fact, our whole vaccine policy, Karen, in New Hampshire and across the nation is really based on not on science. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about
right.
the science, and a lot of it isn't that complicated. The layperson really can understand a lot of this, but it's really based on hype and fear. And in fact, the CDC has hired marketing people to push that fear. And I pulled this directly off. I'm showing Karen a print off from the CDC website, and it talks about, you know, the recipe for pushing vaccines, and they talk about a large component of the demand for vaccines, especially the flu vaccine, is contingent upon things they can't control, timing, severity, duration of the disease, that sort of thing. But in order to foster demand, particularly among people who don't routinely receive an annual influenza vaccine, and I'm quoting, requires creating concern, anxiety, and worry. For example, they must create a perception or sense that many people are falling ill. They must create a perception or sense that many people are experiencing bad illness. And they must create a perception of vulnerability, contracting, and experiencing bad illness. So it's based on hype and fear. I don't see anything in there in that CDC recipe of sharing facts, information, science, and you know, a reasonable decision on this.
Well, back, I think it was in 2009, 2010, there was the big scare on some flu. I can't remember what it was exactly. But when you really
H1N1.
That's the one, H1N1. When you really brought the facts back down to it, the number of deaths were less than the average flu vaccine or flu epidemic that it would ever go through. The United States. I mean, the numbers were ridiculous, and yet they had this thing all blown out of proportion, and everyone was trying to figure out how to get this H1N1 vaccine that was in very short supply.
And speaking of numbers, Karen, we've been vaccinating against influenza for some 10 years or more, and the CDC continues to cite the annual deaths from influenza. But in fact, that's not deaths from influenza. That's deaths from pneumonia generally. They combine the two. So it's really misinformation to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very few deaths from influenza. But in spite of that, the numbers they're using, and even though we've been injecting people with the flu vaccine for some 10 years, those numbers haven't decreased. So we continue to inject people, but even the CDC, by their own numbers, aren't coming to us and saying, look at this. Look at how wonderful this is. We're actually reducing the number of deaths from flu because we continue to use the flu vaccine. We're not seeing that. I would think that if the evidence was there that this vaccine was effective in doing what it was intended to accomplish by reducing illness and deaths, they'd be throwing those numbers out there. They're not there.
Right. And they also don't seem to report how many people continue to get the flu, even though they've had the flu vaccine. I mean, the anecdotal number that I come across are amazing. How many people will tell me I've been under the weather, I had my flu vaccine, and yet those people I know who have not quit taking the flu vaccine every year have said, you know, I haven't had the flu since the last time I took the flu vaccine.
And I reached out to the Department of Health and Human Services, New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services, this year when they started reporting that there were up to 30 flu-related deaths. And I contacted them and I said, you know, how many of those were truly flu deaths and how many were, as we know, gets reported as really pneumonia death? And they took a line to provide that information, claiming that they don't have that. And I also said, out of those 34 people that died, how many of them had been vaccinated against the flu? They declined to provide that information as well. And, you know, I would argue, I mean, isn't that critical information that our Department of Health and Human Services would want to know? You and I want to know, and the public would want to know. If all of these people who are supposedly deceased from the flu this year had been vaccinated, is that flu vaccine working? I mean, that's science. Yeah. But shouldn't we be gathering that data?
Exactly. So now, other than making a choice one way or the other, an informed choice for my family and or for myself, what can we do to encourage a more logical approach to vaccinations? Is there anything that that our listening public can do to take action? Say they want to do something to make a difference for somebody else rather than having all of these drugstores giving us all of these vaccines.
I think the most important thing that people can do is to educate themselves. And again, I recommend the National Vaccine Information Center as a resource. You know, if it's a particular vaccine you're struggling with, want to learn a little bit about all of them, you know, the whole mandate process, that sort of thing, you just find lots of information there. But go there and get educated so you can start making decisions for yourself and your family. And don't hesitate to have these discussions. Gather the information. When you go in for a doctor's visit, ask the doctor your questions. If you haven't sufficient information, or if he hands you information right there, thank him very much for that information. Let him know you're going to go home and do your research. You know, I would say, you know, It just doesn't make sense that any person would make a vaccine decision right there on the spot, being pressured, without giving sufficient thought to this. Go home, think about it, make another appointment and go back, you know, or ask for that, you know, at the prior visit so you can do your research, so you're informed yourself and ask those questions of your doctor. I think keeping the conversation going.
Right.
Asking those questions.
Do you go out and speak to the public at all?
You know, I'd be happy to speak anywhere so that I'm invited to speak on this topic, and find I'm being invited more and more as people want to know about this. They want to hear the other side of it. They're certainly hearing the marketing on the radio, on TV, at their, you know, corner drugstore,
right,
get your shots. But they know there's concern and they're wondering where to go.
Where would they find information for on how to contact you?
Oh, certainly feel free to go to Facebook. It's VaxChoiceNH, VaxChoiceNH, or you can email me at VaxChoiceNH@gmail.com.
Well, thank you, Laura Condon, our New Hampshire voice for vaccine choice. One of the other things that I want to do for you is to expose you to some of these special minutes that our friend Frank Gaffney provides. It's called a Secure Freedom Minute. So at this point, let's listen to that.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Perhaps it's what you should expect when you entrust the presidency to someone who has never managed anything. Still, after 4 years in the White House, it's astounding that President Obama has failed to produce a budget to guide the government for the next fiscal year, and that he won't do so until April. True, Mr. Obama's budgets have been pretty irrelevant in the past, even when they have been submitted on time. Still, it's evidence of incompetent leadership at best, and actual malfeasance at worst, that this president does not feel a duty to provide his blueprint for governing. It's no way to run a railroad, let alone the U.S. government. Even if the Senate actually produces a budget for the first time in years, and Congress ultimately fills the void. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Thank you, Frank Gaffney, for your Secure Freedom Minute. I still have difficulty with our U.S. Congress and their failure to follow the law. I don't know about you, but I'm fed up with the excuse that we cannot get it passed, so we do nothing. 4 years of stalling by Senator Reid is just inexcusable. The sad thing is that we're only talking about cutting how much we will grow government spending. Nowhere is there a plan to stop spending and to keep it at the 2012 limits, for example. This is a total foreign thought to Congress. Meanwhile, the Senate continues to receive pay for not doing their job. And here in New Hampshire, we are not any better. Governor Hassan is pushing for revenue to come from a source that has not even passed the legislature. Currently, the only games of chance that are legal in New Hampshire are the lottery, animal racing, and bingo. And yet, the governor says she will balance her budget with $80 million from casino gambling. Oh, and by the way, Governor, have you noticed that Massachusetts, the state you want to become, passed casino gambling 2 years ago, and they still haven't begun to institute it? So just how can you use the projected revenue to balance this cycle's budget? This brings me to Senator Rob Portman's reversal on genderless marriage. Senator, you have it all wrong. Public policy for the nation is not about you and your son's choices. And certainly, Senator Portman, whose expertise is economics, should be well aware of the economic advantages that traditional one-man, one-woman marriage provides. The public policy on marriage is not about a special interest group. It's about America, her economy, and the continuation of her society. Every child deserves to know their biological mother and father. Government is involved to ensure that the children who are born are provided financial and social stability. It is because we have allowed the marriage covenant to be casually dissolved through no-fault divorce that our prisons and our juvenile divisions are growing exponentially. Do you realize that the marriage contract, as some like to call it, is the only civil contract that we allow to be broken by one party just by deciding that it's okay to walk away from the agreement? Our number one weapon against poverty is marriage. The number one weapon we have against drug, alcohol, and sexual promiscuity is the natural family, where mother and father are engaged in the upbringing of the child. When marriage and the natural family are working well, as they did in the 1950s and before, we did not have the overflowing prisons and massive growing bureaucracy called Health and Human Services. Unless we are willing to stand up for the natural family, America will no longer stand for freedom and liberty, but will become another casualty to dictatorship. Whatever happened to the world does not owe you a living. Throughout history, the dictators, Marxists, and communists knew that to destroy a society, you must first destroy the family. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on New Hampshire's Family Radio, WLMW 90.7 Manchester.